honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by the U.S. Army. Find your place on the Army team at goarmy.com/warriors.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit today with 95-year-old Ray Lee of Fresno, California, a medic with the 97th Infantry Division in Europe during World War II. He later saw occupation duty in Japan as well, and in his home you'll find some unique souvenirs from both of those theaters of war. This interview was recorded at the Veterans Memorial Museum in Fresno, where Ray volunteered for 27 years. They're looking for additional volunteers now. If you think you might be interested and you live around there, the information is linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. One thing we haven't discussed yet is what Ray witnessed in April 1945 when German SS troops were trying to evacuate emaciated prisoners from the Flossenbürg concentration camp, only to be foiled by the liberating forces from the 90th Infantry Division, the 11th Armored Division, and Ray's Infantry Division, the 97th.
Well, you know, we hit one town in Germany. Me and my buddy from Missouri, we decided to take a little walk, see this little town. We were stationed in this town, and we came around a little corner, and all of a sudden, there were three or four Jewish POWs who were dressed in black and white stripe. They had a yellow patch over the left side of the uniform, and when they seen us, I was shocked. We came head on around this corner, and he grabbed us and tried to hug us, and I was trying to fight him off, tell him, no, I don't want to touch him because they were all contaminated. So me and my buddy was fighting him off, trying to tell him to get away from us. We don't want to get too close to him. So anyhow, I'd never seen them. They were in real bad shape. They were all skins and bone. They were all dressed in a black and white stripe. They had a gold star over the left heart. They invited us over to the concentration camp, so we went along with them, and they gave us some liquor to celebrate the release of them. Now, I didn't take it, but my buddy from Missouri, he took a swig of it, and he said, boy, that stuff is strong. He said, boy, he shook his head. I said, I'm glad I didn't take it. And I said, no, I don't want it, I don't want it. They showed me, they took me in the concentration camp. I seen Polish people, I seen Italian, I seen English, I seen Gypsy, I seen all kind of nationality in this concentration camp. And boy, I said, this is one hell of a place to be. Oh man, that's terrible. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's what I wonder. It's not like you've led a privileged life. I mean, you've had to work hard. You grew up without your mother. You heard your grandmother's story of immigrating from China to be a laborer here in America. But to see that kind of suffering, to see people in that kind of physical shape, how much of a jolt was that to you? How did that affect you?
Boy, it was a shock, complete shock. I'd never seen anything like this before in my life. This was an eye-opener. It really showed me how people were treated. I'd never seen people like that in that shape, and they were really bad shape. And one time we had brought one Jewish casualty into the aid station. He was covered with feces. He smelled so bad we couldn't get near him. And he was all caked up on his body, and his whole face, everything was caked up with feces. And he told us, we had a couple of Jewish GI in our outfit. We had to call one of them in and have him interpret what this guy was telling us. And he said there were 30 of them to begin with, and he's the only one left. They had him in this pen that feces all over the place. He was laying in there for almost a month. And we brought him in. We couldn't get close to him. He smelled so bad. Yeah, it was really bad. The other 30 passed away. They died. He was the only survivor. He was the only one left. He was in bad shape.
Is there anything else from those months that you spent in Europe with the 97th Infantry Division that stands out to you today that you think the rest of us ought to know?
Well, I put in 3 years and 3 days with the service, and I learned a lot. Learned how to control myself, how to take care of people, and how to respect people and stuff like that. It makes you grow up faster, become independent, and you can take care of yourself. You know how to greet people and mix with people, things like that. It helps. You know, being in a service, you learn a lot.
Well, what does it feel like to walk around the museum and see stuff still hanging where you put it, or displays that are still where you built them? How satisfying is that for you?
Well, it's a great honor to have people giving us a good remark on the job that I had performed for them.
Every hallway that I walk through here and every room seems to have dozens of framed items on the wall. How many frames do you think you put together and hung in this place?
Well, since I've been here, I believe I hung about 500 to 600 pictures.
So you were here for 27 years, and now you get here every once in a while. What does it mean to you to come back and to see how the other guys are carrying on what you started?
Well, there's few older people left, and there's some new people that just volunteered to help out. Everything seemed to be in order, as I can see. There's a few changes. They brought in some new items that I never did see before, seen before. It really pepped up the museum display for people to see.
Well, and there's one little section of the wall where it has some really nice things to say about somebody, and it has a picture of a guy smiling in a tuxedo, and it says right above it with a big arrow pointing to the right, the Ray Lee Room. What does that mean to you to have an entire room in this beautiful museum named after you?
Well, it's an honor to have my name put on the wall. It's making me feel so good, all the hard time we had putting the museum together. It was quite a job, and I appreciate their putting my picture up on the wall.
Can you take me back to the beginning and tell me the story of how you first got involved here?
I was at home watching TV, and they had a short snap of the museum of a person on a litter. And this gentleman on the litter was all bandaged up, covered up with a GI blanket, and that created some interest in me. So I was with the city of Fresno. My 25 year came up, and then I decided I would spend more time with the museum because I had no other way to have a hobby. So I decided to come down and volunteer at the museum. As I came to the front door with some item I had, Chuck Mungus was trying to spray a 4x8 plywood, and Mr. Warren McGuire, he was on his hands and knees working on an electrical system. Of course, he was a ham operator. He knew what the deal was about wiring. And I looked at Chuck, I said, "Sir, you need some help." Next thing I knew, I was working down there as a volunteer. So he recruited me, so I came back and helped him out. And we came a long ways.
Yeah, you didn't know you were signing up for 27 years, did you?
No, I didn't decide. I didn't know I was going to be here for 27 years. But the item keeps coming in, and we got to have some place to display the item. We ran out of room, and things got pretty hectic. So I decided my time was up. I decided to let the other fellows take the job. So I left. I retired.
Well, and right now they're looking for some more volunteers. They said they could really use about 5 more guys to come down here and help. So if there's somebody out there listening that's saying, "Hey, maybe I should do that," what would be your sales pitch? Why should they consider that?
Well, if you're building a service, you know how it is. You try to keep things going forward. Being a GI, being in the military, it's good to reminisce with the fellows and talk about old times, and same time do a few things around the museum, help display. And we have a lot of people that comes in from different parts of the country. We have people come in from China, Korea, and Germany, different country. You'd be surprised how many people, foreign people, come in to see this museum. It's one of the best museums I've ever seen before. They made comments about it and congratulate all of us for helping out.
And I know it's hard to pick one, because just where I'm sitting now, I'm looking at a bunch of frames on the wall of paintings and lithographs that you put up. You framed photographs. You've done big display cases where the names of local people who've won the Silver Star, been awarded the Bronze Star, the Purple Heart, Distinguished Flying Cross, all these prestigious medals. There's so many things that you've done around here. And other than that sign that says the Ray Lee Room, is there one spot in the museum that you always want to go see again when you come back here?
I enjoy coming back, seeing the fellows, and seeing the new volunteers and looking around. I take a little short walk and I see the museum is still in good shape. We have display of World War One, World War Two, and Korea, Vietnam, Desert Storm, all that campaign that we were all involved in. We have it in the showcases. It's a very nice display for people to see. If you've been in the service and feel patriotic about the country, this is the place to come down and see what all the young fellow that volunteer who has passed away or killed in action or WIA wounded in action. We have all these people come in. They really appreciate you people come in and see what these young fellow have done during the wartime. I was sent to Japan after we finished up in Europe, and the Japanese people accepted me. They looked at me and wondered what I was doing in the United States Army. Well, I had a fib. I told my parents was Japanese, and my other parents was Chinese. We were kind of mixed up, and they couldn't figure out what I was doing in the Army, wearing an American uniform. I was the talk of the village at the time. They seemed very interested in me. I was well treated over there. It was quite an experience for me.
So you were just pulling their leg, telling them you were half Japanese?
Yes, I had to fib a little bit and make them accept me. I used to go out at night and go to this Japanese opera theater. I walked in there, they all turned around and looked at me, started talking, whispering, looking at me, and trying to figure out what the heck I was doing in American uniform. I had a fib and told them I was half Japanese, half American, or Chinese. They sent me away up to Nagano to man a 10-bed hospital. Nagano, I was the only medic, so I went up there by myself. I traveled by train. That was the only transportation we had at the time, the Japanese. Everything was all shot up pretty bad. I had a major up there, just me and him. We used to go around and check on these places. That was the only thing I could think of at the time. They had a 10-bed up there, but I was the only medic up there, and my medical supply had to go take a train, go back down to division headquarters, pick up my medical supply, and go back on the train, back up to Nagano. It was quite a trip, very interesting.
And were your patients wounded Americans or were they Japanese?
Well, I had some American soldiers up there. There were just a few. I didn't see very many of them. The Japanese civilian, they would approach me and ask me for some medication. I would give them whatever I had just to help them out. And word got around, the whole village was coming up and asking me for medication. I told them I couldn't give you them all the medication I had. I'd give you a few, like aspirin and a few ointments like that.
Did that give you some perspective to see the devastation, the destruction, and the situation those Japanese people found themselves in?
Boy, I was shocked when we landed in Japan, Tokyo. Everything was burned up, completely burned up to the ground. They put us in Nakajima aircraft near Kumagaya, and we had all the GI. We had about at least 300 in one big hangar. We all slept in the hangar, and then they got things organized. Then each organization went a different way. They were stationed throughout Japan as occupation.
At 95 years old, what are you most proud of?
I'm still kicking. That's the main thing. I'm still alive. And I look around, most of my buddies are gone. I'm very fortunate. The man upstairs taking care of me, so I'm very grateful for that.
And I know you get asked this a lot, so I'm sure you have a good answer. What's your secret? You're 95, and you walk straighter and faster than people 30 years younger. What's your secret?
Well, I was in the infantry. I learned how to walk, and we walked quite a few miles, and I acquired that habit, and I still have a habit. I walk quite a bit, and I exercise in the backyard, do a lot of garden work, but I walk. I never forget walking. I used to hike all the time. Every time they say, let's go, we all go. We walk about 10, 15 miles every day. So that's how I got my walking habits in shape.
This museum is here to preserve history, to educate future generations, to let them know about the price of freedom. As a World War II veteran, is there anything you think the rest of us need to know about what you and all those other men and women did 75 years ago and why it still matters today?
Well, you know, there's quite a few of us all around, and we would appreciate the younger people to respect this country, what we have done to help preserve freedom and all this freebies that we're getting that other countries are limited and forbidden to do. This is a good country to live in. I appreciate it. This country has done quite a bit for me and other fellows. Just keep respecting the flag and respect the older generation that put up their best time of their life to serve our country.
A few years ago, you went to Washington, D.C. with Central Valley Honor Flight. You saw the National World War II Memorial. What was that like? What did you get out of that experience?
Well, I really enjoyed the flight. In fact, that's how I met you over there. We had a nice trip and really enjoyed it. I was very thankful for that. Seeing all those monuments and stuff like that, it really impressed me, especially when the changing of the guard. That was something to see. And the Iwo Jima statue, putting up the flag, that was something to see too. It's a great tour. I really appreciate it. That's a lifetime visit I never forget.
And I always like to ask guys, not to try to put a thought in their head or tell them what they should think, but I'm genuinely curious. So when you are at the National World War II Memorial and you're looking and here's this wall of gold stars representing 406,000 Americans who didn't come home, and you saw a lot of those guys in Europe. When you were at that memorial looking at that wall of gold stars, what was going through your mind?
I was amazed. Everything was so beautiful over there. That monument was beautiful. And looking at it, I said, geez, those guys gave it all they had. And they deserve something like this for remembrance and having people seeing what they have done.
And one of the men represented on that wall of gold stars, part of that heavy cost of freedom in World War II, was Ray's friend from Kalinga. Remember, he talked about the customer at their Chinese restaurant who loved fried rice, the one they had nicknamed Apple? His name was Philip T. Mize, and Ray has never known what ended up happening to him. But thanks to today's technology and our interconnected worlds, I can tell you, a newspaper article from the end of World War II contained the names of 31 men from Kalinga who were killed in the war. But Philip Mize, at that point, was listed as still missing. His fate was yet unknown. He had been in the Philippines before the war started, serving with the 19th Bomb Group. It wasn't until all the surviving prisoners of war returned that it became clear he had indeed been captured, had survived the infamous Bataan Death March, but then died in captivity. The Cabanatuan prison camp is the one that was famously liberated in a daring rescue that would become known as the Great Raid. But Philip Mize, Ray Lee's friend from Kalinga, passed away in that camp well before that rescue on June 24, 1942. His name is one of more than 2,700 listed on the Cabanatuan American Memorial, erected at the site of the former prison camp 30 years ago by those who survived their captivity there. I have linked a photo of Philip Mize's grave marker from the American Cemetery in Manila for you at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, where you can also find a video of Ray leading us around the museum collections he had such a big hand in building and maintaining for 27 years. That's all the time we have for today. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by the U.S. Army, building a new generation of leaders at goarmy.com/warriors.